The Guardian.
Welcome to this Film Weekly Extra, dedicated to the Edinburgh International Film Festival, which runs between the 18th and the 29th of June. The festival has made a bold move this year and struck out from the main fringe, music, books and international festivals. I spoke to artistic director Hannah McGill to find out why the film festival has decided to go it alone and to get a preview of what's on offer this year. Hannah, welcome to Film Weekly and good luck for tonight. This is your opening night. You must be trembling with anticipation.
Yeah, we are trembling. Well, you mainly just want to make sure that everyone's transport has arrived on time and everything's going all right. So that's the main worry today. And then the dress, obviously.
Your dress?
Yeah.
As artistic director, are you allowed to look better than Keira Knightley and Sienna Miller?
I'm allowed to try, but good luck to me. No, it's actually quite a relief because it means no one will be looking at me, so I'm quite pleased.
You must be quite proud to have this film opening up. It does seem a very sort of perfect film to open up. What is a new era for the Edinburgh International Film Festival?
Absolutely. I mean, it was really important that we had a really strong opening night for this year for our first June festival. And I couldn't have asked for something more perfect, really. John Mabry is an old friend of the festivals. He won our Michael Powell Award 10 years ago exactly for Love is a Devil, so that's a really nice little thing to come back to. And yeah, I mean, obviously I wanted a film, I didn't know who would come with it, and so to have all the talent coming as well is absolutely wonderful, and it's going to be great.
It's also kind of a new look of a British film. I was talking to John Mabry about it. It's got a sort of edginess to the kind of what has often been a kind of stodgy kind of poetic kind of subject or a costume drama in a way. He's kind of given it a little bit of an experimental edge.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what I love about it. I think it does have that quality of being very glossy and shiny and glamorous in places, and obviously it's got these beautiful women in it. But as you say, it really gets across the roughness of the way that people lived during the war, and also the psychological effects of what that generation went through. And I think it does all of that very bravely. It's certainly not just pretty.
So that's the opening night film, which kind of takes care of itself. then your work really kicks in, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, you have, as you mentioned, this is your first June festival. It's the first time Edinburgh's moved out of that morass of stuff that's at the fringe, that's the comedy festival these days, the international festival, the books festival. Why have you done it, and does it look at this moment to have been a good idea?
There were a number of reasons that we chose to move the dates. It's actually something that's been under discussion around these parts for a very long time, in part because of the enormous pressure on Edinburgh in August. I mean, obviously the August phenomenon is incredible, but it's grown so much in the time that the International and the Film Festival have existed that it's a whole different proposition now. A million extra people in the city, which is great, but obviously can make it quite difficult to find space for guests and to also get the coverage that the festival needs and deserves. So it's to give it its own breathing space in the city, and it also works better for us in terms of the International Film Festival calendar and where we sit within it. And June is a lovely time to be in Scotland, so that's another good reason.
You get long nights, which you always
very long, yeah, very long.
And I mean, at the moment, has it seemed to have worked? You've assembled your first program. Obviously, you've got less time to do it because you only ended beginning of September last year, so you had to rush it together. Has it been a very difficult rush to get it done, or has it actually sort of seemed to be a very comfy fit?
There's been a lot of pressure on all of the staff. I mean, it's particularly difficult when you lose 2 months of your planning time in terms of things like just fundraising and boring things like that and staffing. We take on so many extra staff through all that stuff was particularly pressured. In terms of the programming, if anything, it made a difference in a positive way because distributors talked to us further ahead. They had more ideas of the distinction between us and a later summer or autumn festival. It was a new, exciting way for them to launch films. So it actually came together rather well. The talent we found were more available. Industry guests have been very quick to sign up. And the public have responded very, very positively. I mean, obviously, we won't be home and dry and with how we feel about it until it's done and finished. But so far, certainly the signs have been very good.
So the Michael Powell Award, which is the kind of main award that Edinburgh gives out, which is for first best British feature film.
Yep.
Is that right? Best British feature film. And that's been going on through the ages. You mentioned John Mabry won it for Love is the Devil 10 years ago. So obviously people win it and go on. I remember London to Brighton. I remember some fantastic films that have been discovered in that British section. It looks pretty strong again this year. And again, pretty experimental. Stuff that you wouldn't think Britain is producing unless you went to Edinburgh.
This is exactly it. I mean, I think one thing that is shifting quite a lot, although people are very passionately interested in film in this country and they have a lot of access to film now that they didn't have before through DVD and through the internet, what can happen is people can assume that which is on at their local cinema is all there is, and then there can be other films that never get a commercial release that can pass under the radar. And so, yeah, it's really important to us that people notice how wide-ranging the British stuff is, and that there is a vast range of filmmaking and very, very creative, low-budget filmmaking happening in the UK at the moment. And yeah, we're really, really proud of the British section. I think the jury are going to have a very interesting time.
So if someone's heading up to Edinburgh this weekend, Hannah, for your first opening weekend, your big June weekend, what can they expect? I know it's really difficult for you as a festival director. Every single one of these films is absolutely brilliant and you love every single one of them as your own child. However, I am going to ask you to do a judgment of McGill in some way and just kind of point people to what they can see over the few coming days that they really should see.
Cool. Well, we've got some really fun stuff for the weekend. I mean, the weekend is sort of lots and lots of big titles. And I mean, the range is very broad of the programme, as you know. But I mean, for instance, the film that we have about the gorillas, Damon Albarn and Jamie Hewlett's cartoon band, it's called Bananas. That's a whole 7-year history of the band by a filmmaker, Kerry Levy, who followed them around with a small video camera, basically. That's loads of fun.
That's an amazing kind of look behind this kind of what is an extraordinary phenomenon in pop music, isn't it? Which Edinburgh's always done, I know, because I mean, what I love about Edinburgh is the Mirrorball section as well.
Yes, and Bananas is kind of the perfect Mirrorball film, because Mirrorball is very much about sort of design and music video, and it's the sort of funky end of the festival, and Bananas sort of covers all of that, and it's just really infectious, good, fun film, whether you know the band or not. It's just really, really,
everyone
really cool.
Knows Damon Albarn.
Yeah, that's what I thought. What else? Over the weekend, we are very honoured to have the great Errol Morris, one of the world's great documentarians, coming with his new film, Standard Operating Procedure. Now, this is sort of the other end of the mood spectrum from Bananas. This is very, very harrowing stuff, but this is the first time that the U.S. soldiers who were convicted of the prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib have actually spoken about what happened on camera, and it's an incredible document. It's very honest and revealing and very powerful.
It does seem to go hand in hand with Alex Gibney's Taxi to the Dark Side, which
exactly,
we are featuring on our other Film Weekly show this week.
Right, yes, no, a very interesting other point of view, and with all this sort of drama and power that Errol Morris can give to something, so that's very exciting.
And you've got Errol Morris in town himself.
We do indeed, yes, which we're very excited about. And what else? Another big fun film for the weekend is The Whackness, which stars Ben Kingsley and Josh Peck, and that's a story about an unlikely bond between a young marijuana dealer. Can I say that on the Observer podcast?
You could even say pot.
And his shrink, who is played by Ben Kingsley, and Ben Kingsley is just hilarious in this film. So that's a few. We've got some big parties and stuff, some live music events this weekend as well, and the usual range of things. So
it does seem that you're trying to make a difference, Hannah. And I completely admire that. How you can, you know, it's only your second year as artistic director, and you sort of have made this huge gamble and turned what is one of it's the oldest festival ship in on the circuit. 61 years you're now on. 62 you're entering. So, you know, you've actually turned it around so quickly. Your hat's off to you. But also have you actually changed what sort of atmosphere there'll be in the town? As you know, it's out of the fringe. People can't wander off and go and see a bit of comedy. They're kind of there. Have you had to make sort of a provision for people who are just there for your festival?
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting about being in June is it gives people an opportunity to notice that Edinburgh is a great city year-round. And as it happens, there are sort of events going on that tie in with us thematically. You know, you can go to the Portrait Gallery and look at the Vanity Fair exhibition, for instance. So there is other stuff happening. But also our programming, we're trying to incorporate more events that are not just films or even necessarily directly film-related. So we've got a couple of them. We've got a performance by British Sea Power. We've got a VJ night in a club. We've got an exhibition. We've got lots of script readings. So it's kind of trying to branch out so that, yeah, people who are used to getting a more varied cultural diet in Edinburgh can experiment with different bits of our programme.
And I suppose that the normal buzz from loads of filmmakers coming from around Britain will be in evidence as well.
Absolutely. We've got loads and loads of guests. I mean, one of the great things about being in June is that it does give us the space to bring more people. And certainly it's one of our big commitments as we evolve the festival to bring talent for as many films we possibly can. So we've got lots and lots of people landing in the next few days.
So that includes low-budget filmmakers and people like Errol Morris and José Padilla, who won the Golden Bear in Berlin. And
sure. I mean, as much as we can. I mean, unfortunately, no festival has the resources to bring every single person involved in every single film as much as we would like to, but we do as much as we can for the filmmakers.
And life for you during the festival?
Lots of running around in uncomfortable shoes, lots of saying my name into microphones, and then about 4 days in, I will lose my voice completely. That's the plan.
In my experience of you at Edinburgh Hannah, it's normally after the second day. Don't overdo it tonight, my dear.
I won't overdo it tonight. I'm on duty. I'm working very hard.
Yeah, I remember you last year.
I've also got very high shoes, so I don't want to do anything. I don't want to move too fast, and I'll risk falling over.
Right. And don't trip up Keira Knightley on the red carpet just because she's thin.
What are you trying to do? You're just telling me all the scary things that might happen to me.
Hannah, I do wish you the very best of luck with Edinburgh this year. If you've got one little baby to pick, one gem that you've unearthed, that you have a secret kind of absolute love for, that you saw first, I don't know where, at some festival, and you've brought to Edinburgh, is there one that you're absolutely proud of that I must come and see?
Oh, well, I'd probably send you to something quite worthy and harrowing, which you might not want. You might want something more fun. But there's a couple of little documentaries that really, I think, are sort of transforming of one's opinion about things. Specifically, there's one about prostitution in the United States called Very Young Girls, which is one of those films that doesn't sound like a very attractive pitch, but, it absolutely transformed the way I think about that stuff. So that one's really important to me. I would always recommend just sort of exploring the titles that you've never heard of, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And that's why I'm asking you, because I don't know what Trail of the Screaming Forehead is.
Trail of the Screaming Forehead is fantastic, very, very funny. But I recommend Very Young Girls, and I recommend there's a wee Chinese film called Fuji in Blue, which I think is absolute genius. First-time filmmaker, that's very, very strong.
In Chinese, that's Jinbi Hui Huang.
Oh, very good.
See, I've got it right before me. I've put a little tick by it. A recommendation by Hannah McGill. It doesn't take much to get me to go and see a modern Chinese film. Thank you very much. Hannah McGill, best of luck at Edinburgh this year. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. See you soon.
And as Hannah McGill mentioned there, this year's opening night premiere is John Mabry's film, The Edge of Love, about the turbulent and triangular love life of poet Dylan Thomas. I met up with John Mabry and I started out by asking him how he managed a project that was dogged by tabloid attention due to the star qualities of his leading ladies, Sienna Miller and Keira Knightley.
What we didn't expect and we couldn't have anticipated was just the level of harassment. There were 20 to 30 paparazzi every single day when we were on location. And it wasn't just, the thing is they make these two girls' lives a misery on a daily basis. But the fact that we were working, they were appearing in shot, they were dropping out of trees. There was even one, we were filming on the beach and there was a boatload of them out at sea which started to sink. So, one of the crew actually called the rescue team. I told them not to. I said, let it sink. It just made life that little bit more difficult. And
why do you think it is? Why do you think that Keira plus Sienna equals this kind of tabloid froth, this kind of extreme kind of excitement to see the two of them together? What is? Have they got a certain celebrity that rubbed together doubles or quadruples?
I think so. I mean, the fact is they are both, for whatever reason, especially in this country, they are tabloid fodder. They're beautiful girls, and also they both get subjected to the, she's too fat, she's too thin, she's going out with him, she's going with him. The minutiae of their lives is examined. And I know, Sienna's a great personal friend of mine, and I've come out of her flat, and there have been guys doorstepping her, literally, and they will scream abuse at her just to try and get a reaction. I know it's a cliche, but, they're in the public eye, but they don't choose to have that daily invasion of their lives. We got a ton of publicity out of it. I'm not going to be, naive about it. It didn't do us any harm. I mean, what was more worrying was, often on the first day of filming, the scene we were shooting appeared on YouTube. And there may well be a parallel version of this film that's been shot by tabloid video cameras, because that's a relatively new phenomenon, that they videotape stuff and put it on the web.
It won't quite have the Mabry lighting, I shouldn't imagine.
It won't have any of my gimmicks. but it was just, it's unnerving. And the thing is, we tried to give the guys, because all due respect to them, they're doing a job, I understand that. And so we did give them a kind of photo op, but that wasn't enough. And this ludicrous idea that there was going to be a snog or a kiss. I mean, there is a scene where the girls have a bath together, but, that's what girls do. Yeah. Girls, and actually, it's wartime, and there's rationing and blah, 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 blah. But
When you attempted to put that in, because, I mean, it is a sexual story. It is about sex as much as it is about poetry and about the war and about these people. Were you tempted, when you kind of saw on the outside, lesbian lover on people, you thought, actually, it might maybe give them a bit of what they want?
No, I'd like to think I have a bit more dignity as a filmmaker. No, that's not the story. I mean, you know, the kind of this is based on real characters, real events, and actually lots of their relatives, including Dylan's daughter, are still around. There's no need to make it more salacious or what's that lovely word people like to use about my work, prurient. Because it's interesting enough as it is. Yeah. And the dynamic between the two couples and between the four of them in the story is twisted and interesting enough already.
It's a great lipstick movie. There's a poster behind you as I'm talking to you, which you've made a massive red lips on it. It seemed to me that you really kind of enjoyed using the colours of that period. And it's not normally a period that one thinks of particularly colourful. It's either black and white, just through the archive footage we see of it, or kind of terribly brown and dowdy and wartime. You managed to find splurges of colour and impressionistic kind of haze.
In places. I mean, the beginning of the film, for instance, is a deliberate red herring. I mean, I do a very highly stylized, so it looks like a Hollywood movie when Kira's first singing, and then it starts looking like it's a sort of Dorothy L'Amour scene or something from a 40s movie, but then you realise she's actually just singing in front of a painted backdrop down the tube. I think the film's quite frumpy looking, actually, but there is a very particular colour palette, and, you know, red lipstick is a signature of the era. But you've also got, like I say, I hate to bang on about it, you've got two of the most beautiful women in the world and two really great-looking guys, and it's kind of, that's just how it is. You know, that's cinema.
Yeah. Well, you're about to go off up to Edinburgh, kicking off the Edinburgh International Film Festival and opening it as well. Is that significant for you, Edinburgh, and especially the move of date? Because it's looking like a slightly, you know, they're going for a slightly edgier British fair, and yours certainly is a sort of, Is it edgy? I don't know if it's edgy in the kind of the tradition of kind of poet stories and costume dramas. It also has a certain new look to it.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, yeah, I didn't set out to make an episode of Poirot or Miss Marple.
I can see Kira as that old biddy one day.
don't wish that on her.
No, that means she's working. When she's 80, she'll be delighted.
I actually personally love to relax with a bottle of wine and an episode of Poirot or Miss Marple, but that's another story. No, I mean, I'm very excited to go to Edinburgh for one reason in particular, which is 10 years ago I showed Lovers of the Devil there, my Francis Bacon film, and it won the Michael Powell Award for Best British Feature, and Derek Jacobi and Daniel Craig jointly won Best Actor for their roles in that film. So I have very fond memories of Edinburgh. I also remember an extremely dissipated, drunken celebration afterwards that shall go, I won't go any further, but it's a great town to have a party. No, but what really is really exciting this year is that now the festival is a standalone festival. It's always been one of the best festivals on the circuit because it's not about commerce. I mean, you know, Cannes is a business factory. I think they've lost all sense of what the true spirit of that festival used to be about. And unfortunately, the Americans have started to invade the Venice Film Festival in a similar way. I mean, Venice is a beautiful festival just because it's a beautiful place. Berlin is a very serious festival and great fun, but it's always so bloody cold when they hold it there. No, but Edinburgh, like I say, it's a beautiful city, but it's a great festival because it's about filmmaking. You know, it's not about commerce. And that's very liberating. Yeah. And you get to meet other filmmakers and, you know, at every level of the game. And it's a real privilege and a real honour that they've selected Edge of Love for the gala opening.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because Hannah McGill, who's the artistic director, I think this, in a way, is not, I wouldn't say call this a chick flick at all, Edge of Love, but I think that there's a definite resonance that the artistic director of that festival felt with this film and having two kind of very young and very interesting British actresses in the lead.
Well, the thing, I mean, I actually do, I've been jokingly saying this is my first chick flick. You know, I'm hoping to do a rom-com soon about suicide. But no, you know, the fact is we have got two of the most beautiful and famous women in the world in this film.
You're very pleased with that.
Well, I am. But at the same time, I happen to believe, like I say, that they've given the best performances of their careers. We've got two brilliant, talented male actors in it, along with all the supporting cast, don't forget. But actually, this is a John Mabry film. You know, it's another feel-bad, dysfunctional, you know, what a bunch of drunks tragedy. With a few laughs along the way.
Well, champagne for you and for being a real friend, John Mabry. Congratulations on Edge of Love and enjoy Edinburgh.
Cheers, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
John Mabry there, and alongside the affections of Sienna and Kira is the actor Matthew Rhys, lucky thing, playing the central role of poet Dylan Thomas. When I met up with Matthew, I asked him if for a Welsh actor the role had a special significance. But before we hear from him, let's have a listen to Matthew in action as Dylan.
I heard you on the radio. Like going home it was, your poems. Like going back. Where's the posh accent from?
You should have looked me up.
Should I?
If I can get all my friends to donate 5 bob each, this is the plan. If I get them all to do that, then I don't have to sell my soul writing bloody propaganda films. I can write my bloody poetry.
You'd have to join the army.
Grade 3, sitting here before you, Vera. Lungs rattled like a Sunday hawk. So, lend us 5 bob.
I'll give you a snout, Dylan Thomas. That's what you'll get from me.
Oh. Yeah, there's not sort of many Welsh iconic figures to play, so when the opportunity arose to play one of them, it's a sort of, you know, a pressure and an honour.
Is it something that as an actor you've been doing Dylan Thomas pieces for auditions or ever since you were like a kid? Is that something that you know, like everyone does a bit of Shakespeare, everyone's got a bit of To Be or Not To Be up there, Steve? Have you got a bit of Undermilk Wood under the blanket?
Well, funny you should say that. No, yes, you do grow up with sort of, you know, Father Christmas and Dylan Thomas in Wales. But one of my speeches for Drama College was Undermilk Wood.
Which one?
It's the Reverend Eli Jenkins' prayer, which is rather unusual for an 18-year-old. But on the day, I remember when I went in, the guy at RADA went, what are your pieces? And I went, oh, Henry VI, Part 3 and Undermilk Wood. And he went, rather obvious for a Welshman. And I was like, oh, God, I've messed it already.
What else could you possibly do? I don't know. As a Welshman. I mean, you want to be across the bit of Welshness, I would imagine, with in the mix.
Absolutely. It's either that or How Green Was My Valley. And there's not that many great speeches in that.
But it must have been when you go to embody him next, once you've got the part, is there a bit of extra pressure or is it just all self-imposed?
No, it was healthily self-imposed by myself when I got the part. I, you know, gave myself a healthy degree of pressure. That was just compounded when you sort of family members and friends say, oof, don't mess this one up, for God's sake. Yeah, and, you know, sort of returning home to Wales, the Welsh press were keen to say that as well. So the pressure was flying in from every angle.
What do you base your Dylan Thomas on? Because obviously everyone's got a reading of his work, and everyone's got a reading of the character himself, and various pictures of him have appeared, and portraits, both kind of pictorial and, you know, verbal. Where did you base your impression of him, embodiment of him?
Oh, very good. Yes, several areas really. I read a lot, as much of the biographies, trying to glean how other people viewed him so I could get a picture of him. And then I was fortunate to talk to Eronwy's daughter, and she helped me a lot with the more slightly more physical aspects of him. But then endless listening to his recordings, and just a sort of an amalgamation of all those things which you sort of arrive somewhere, you know, on the day one of filming.
He's a difficult character, Dylan Thomas, to like, even though one kind of admires him and loves him. Was it difficult to put that across as you know, because the sort of heart of the film is this guy that they're fighting over, or that they're kind of torn over, who's obviously a brilliant poet, but he's a bit of a shit.
Yeah, yes, he is. And you know, I personally can't go in going, oh, well, he's a shit, I must play him as a shit. You find the endearing qualities in him. And that was very evident, I think is partly where Charmian based, you know, her interpretation of it was in the biographies. He's often referred to as very childlike and almost childish in his behaviour. And that's what I sort of latched onto and keyed into, that it was more childlike than sort of malicious.
Excellent. And I know you're just off to Edinburgh to kind of headline up there and open the festival, which is, I think, you know, very exciting, because it's an extraordinary kind of new chapter in Edinburgh Film Festival's kind of gestation, I suppose, into a different kind of festival. It seems like quite a sort of good choice of a film, because it's a different kind of poet film, a different kind of costume drama, if you like.
Yes, and you know, I think it's a real honour for us as a film to be, you know, accepted as the opening film. But I certainly think it's fitting in that everything, you know, all the good boxes are ticked as a festival opener. So I'm just hoping it'll be well received.
Yeah. Have you been up there before?
I have. The first film I ever made, actually, I went up there, was at the Edinburgh Film Festival, and that was when I was young and happy.
What was that called?
It's called House of America by a director called Mark Evans.
Mark Evans. I saw it up there, in fact. Yeah, at Edinburgh, yeah.
That was 12 years ago.
Wow.
Look at me now.
And now you're all miserable because you've got to give Bitter and Twisted.
Bitter and Twisted, yeah.
You've got to give your jackets back. This stardom thing's rubbish.
Rubbish.
Matthew Rhys there as Dylan Thomas, and after its premiere up in Edinburgh, The Edge of Love is on general release across Britain from Friday the 20th of June. Next week, Film Weekly will be coming to you live from the Edinburgh International Film Festival. So for more information about what's going on up there, go to edfilmfest.org.uk. Also, if you've been visiting the festival, we're keen to know what you thought, what was hot and what was not. Email us at film.weekly@observer.co.uk or post your comments on our blog. That's all from this Film Weekly Extra. From me, Jason Solomons, and my producer, Jason Phipps. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.